Hi, this is the Pacifica Archives Task Force meeting on Wednesday, the 5th of November. I'm Bonnie Simmons, and why don't I run through what I think is the role out there. Carolyn Burden?
I'm present.
Brian DeShazer?
Hello.
Andrea Turner?
Andrea, present.
Thanks.
Okay. Don Armel is here and is helping us out. Wendy Schrell?
Here.
And have I missed anyone? I didn't think so. Brian, why don't you go ahead and I suspect that we're just going to have some informal notes. I'll go ahead and try to take some notes tonight. And why don't you go ahead and start telling us about the fund drive that's coming up on the 18th?
Okay. Actually, can I switch and do the other quick announcement first? Because it will speak
to...
You may
do whatever you want
grant.
To.
Okay, good. Grant. All right, so grant funding is, of course, incredibly important to the preservation of the tapes. There's not in the regular budget of the archives. So getting grants is incredible because it helps prioritize the preservation activities at the academic level, as opposed to the other very important task and function of the archives, which is serving the stations. So we just received word today that we did receive another grant from the National Endowment for the Arts.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, wow!
Yay! So it's it's not consecutive fifth. We did drop a year because we needed time to do the grant work. But this is the fifth award from the National Endowment for the Arts. So we're very excited. It's a very modest grant. It's $15,000. We have to come up with a match of $15,000 or more to actually complete the project. So a lot of the fund drive, yes, indeed, the match for this grant is already budgeted within the archives budget for this fund drive. So November 18th, it's already booked. So fund drive, we meet our goal. Grant is good. Match is done. And we can start the planning for revising the budget and getting it going. So hooray for grants.
Mm-hmm. Brian, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is it addressed to a specific project or not?
Yes. This will more or less take out care of more tape preservation. In other words, the digital transfer of more tapes. In past NEA grants, we started the Folio project.
Oh, cool.
The digitization of the Folio program guides. But we don't need it anymore because the Internet Archive, for free, has donated their services and is digitizing and making searchable and available for free to the public every single Folio program guide in the network from 1949 on. KPFK station, KPFK in Los Angeles, started in 1959, and our Internet Archive has already completed the entire digitization, full-on metadata made accessible. So if you go to archive.org and search Folio, F-O-L-I-O, you can find the graphics, word searchable texts, different formats, and that really just helps give an incredible tool for researchers in Pacifica programming.
Well, I'm sorry, is it internet or archive.org?
No, just archive.org.
Oh, archive.org. Okay.
Yeah, just archive. And it's singular.
Then search Folio.
And then search Folio, and then you'll find KPFK Folio somewhere in there, and then you'll get, I don't know, there's something like 425 issues that have been scanned, every single page scanned. Some really great cover artwork, which hopefully when we get it all done, the entire network project, we can put a collage, a quilt of covers together in a nice 60th anniversary tool for the network. So next up, we're already sending...
Wait, Brian.
What?
Can I ask a question about the NEA grant?
Yes.
Okay, so congratulations. I know a little bit about how... Hard to apply for. What is the grant period? Is it 1 year, or how does it work? When can we apply again for an NEA grant?
Right. This grant is a one-year grant, I believe. Now you just made me question myself, because the Grammy grant, we did it on a 2-year grant because we needed that much time to actually accomplish the work.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that makes me think we might have put this into a 2-year grant. But let me just bank with that's a 1-year grant, because it's only $15,000. I mean, most of that is really just a lot of tape. There's not a lot of back work. Bonnie, back to your question. So it's mostly tape preservation, and there is some professional consultant with the database upgrade and some of the more academic cataloging and description correction of the tapes themselves. The current Grammy grant that we're working on, we're actually halfway plus through the 2-year grant. And those tapes are now just coming back into the station, into the archives. We're getting DVD copies and then 2 different versions of CD copies. And then that grant also includes copyright research, catalog description, database improvement, and such like that. So that's how the grant projects are working. This NEA grant, we sort of banked most of our money in just getting the tapes digitized, because
cool.
We've done a lot of the other background work with the database in previous grants.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Yay.
I have a question. For the $15,000 match, it has to be in dollars, right?
We do have some in-kind built in there, but I do believe that we have to, what's booked in the archives budget is $23,000 match, because we knew that what we do with the NEA, we ask for $50,000, and then they give us $15,000, and then we have to revise the budget and basically still accomplish the same task with a lot less money. So we have sort of built in that we do need to come up with $23,000 match plus the in-kind that we have built in with our staff percentage of what we put into it.
Okay. And so that's what the fund drive would be for, the $23,000?
Right. The goal for the fund drive is $125,000. $23,000 is earmarked for this grant match.
Okay. Just earmarked.
But honestly, we need $250,000 if you really want to be truthful about it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Sure. And Carolyn, I know you were asking about grants because of a previous suggestion that you had sent in another grant, and we did take a quick look at it. But be mindful that we were looking at it when Ms. Sawaya resigned.
Mm-hmm.
So there really was no there to take the grant to say, all right, so this is what we think about it. But what we did think about it was that it was more of a network grant to apply for. And I'm sorry that I can't actually remember the name of the grant that you had suggested. But it was one that was sort of like an overall network grant that the archives would have been just a little piece of it. So basically, we needed to take it to national office for them to consider as a national office grant, which doesn't happen. So that's sort of where that went.
You must have looked at it more carefully than I did. One glitch, I think, was that they specifically disavowed preservation, but I thought there was a great deal in there for development of staff and projects and programs, but you obviously have looked at it more carefully than I, so...
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. So that's where we are with that. So we got an NEA grant. We're still working on a Grammy grant, and that's about as much as we can handle.
Uh-huh.
So there. All right, so now fund drive. Hooray! All right, so let's see, how do I want to sort of express myself in this? All right, so we know that the economy is in the crappers. Pacifica is having a very difficult financial situation. You know, at the local stations, it is affecting staffing, affecting the morale at the stations, and the listeners are fatigued with fundraising. And it's turning, some of feedback, this does not characterize the whole thing, but it seems like it's a shopping network for part of the time and then a radio station part of the time. That is not how I describe it. What's necessary is necessary to keep the stations running. But what it led to in terms of the Archives Fund Drive Day is that I really felt that we needed to distinguish ourselves in a different way from the rest of the fundraising, not only to gain a different ear from the listener, but to also allow the stations to continue their game, and I say that in a respectful way, continue the game of fundraising for the stations. But also this does give the stations another tool to continue fundraising off of what we're able to bank with. So in figuring out the key to how can we be different in a new, exciting, hip, new, fresh, we have, of course, been producing From the Vault, our series, for 2 years now. We have 120 episodes in the can, as they say. And 2 years ago, Lamont Yeakey, who was an Archives Task Force member and a KPFK LSB member, is also a professor of history at Cal State LA. And he took our From the Vault episodes and selected 20 episodes for his civil rights class and 20 episodes that pertained to his curriculum in U.S. history. And that really did, and he has it as required listening in his class. The students are required to buy the CD with 10 hours or the 20 hours of episodes on it that actually are a resource for his curriculum. And that was a huge key in terms of what is possible with this material. So Mr. Yeakey, Professor Yeakey, you know, has us come and present.
Hey, good night.
Oh, good night.
Hello.
No.
All right, so we present the collection to the students, and it's required listening. And we actually make a little bit of revenue from those semesters. So the idea, basically, is how do I expand that throughout the entire United States? So we have created, the title of the fund drive is called From the Vault to the Classroom, Launching the Pacifica Radio Archives Campus Campaign. And the idea is we have truncated From the Vault episodes into 8 or 9 premium packages that do indeed pertain to real curriculum. So we have the civil rights package, the U.S. history package, the environment package, women's studies package, the 1968, my famous 1968 package, Malcolm X, there's enough of Malcolm X for him to stand alone. And Noam Chomsky is turning 80 years old December 7th. So we have enough Noam Chomsky audio in the archives going back to 1968, as a matter of fact, another 1968 buzz, that we have devoted an hour to him and in a conversation. So that's what we're doing with these little From the Vault packages. What it allows us to do in the pitch, and this is what sort of distinguishes our sound from the regular fundraiser, is that when a donor calls in and we pitch $75 for the Civil Rights Pack, it's 10 episodes, 10 hours of carefully selected and corroborated resource, primary resource materials that is, as of yet, part of the education system in the United States. So when you call to get the Civil Rights Pack for $75, you get to name the school where we will duplicate that gift and send it to that school with a letter in your name that tells the educator what they're receiving in terms of how it is used as a tool in the classroom. So that's the campus campaign. You pay once, you give twice. You name the gift, you name the school. On our website, we'll have a USA map, and as the schools are named during the day, bubbles will pop up to show where the recordings will end up in a school. High school, junior college, community college, university, you know, high school and up. So that was sort of the key. And from there, we have really been working in the background and doing interviews and having everything pre-recorded as much as possible to not only highlight the content that we're trying to extend into the classrooms, but also the testimonials from educators, scholars, journalists, students, program producers that use the materials in new ways, whatever their field of expertise is. Connie Lawn from the Washington Post, I believe. I think I get that wrong. You know, she used the 1968 material in her storytelling for the DNC this year. The RFK, we had a feedback from a teacher in Massachusetts in high school that said that they were playing the RFK episode in the classroom on the anniversary of Robert Kennedy's assassination. So these little moments that sort of make us happy in the archives, we really felt that we deserved to reward the listeners who have funded us in the past to allow the preservation to happen, to allow these kind of jewel moments to happen. So we'll be talking to Claiborne Carson from the Martin Luther King papers in Stanford University when we donated the Mrs. King, Coretta Scott King speech from 68. We made sure that they had a copy of it. We'll be talking to the Dearborn, Michigan Ford Museum where Rosa Parks' bus exists, and the exhibit Liberty and Justice for All actually broadcasts the Rosa Parks interview from Pacifica, and we are credited. So we've been doing a lot of great outreach with our 68 project in media advisories, but also we're really getting noticed out there in the scholarly world of how important these recordings, now that they're being heard on a regular basis throughout the network and the affiliate stations. Thanks to the affiliate stations, those recordings are being heard in places that they hadn't been heard before. So that's sort of one of the big pitches. And so I'll stop for a minute, and then I'll tell you some of like the specific highlights of what we'll have during the day, which I'll tell you like right this second. We interviewed Noam Chomsky today. Sonali Kolhatkar interviewed Noam Chomsky. So we really did get the exclusive first interview with Noam Chomsky after the election of a African-American president, president-elect, Mr. Obama. Mm-hmm. So that's really a big coup. So Sonali will be airing the first 10 minutes of that interview tomorrow on her show here at KPFK to forward promote the fund drive on the 18th. What's extraordinary is that he actually talks for 10 minutes about the election, and that's, Chomsky is one of the smartest men on the planet. All right, so I'll rest for a moment and take some questions or comments or whatever at this point.
Wendy?
Go ahead, Wendy.
Brian, I so miss your reports at the PNB meetings. It's always a huge highlight. Well, I mean, you're the one unit, I hate that word, but that does forward-thinking and inspiring things like this that are, I don't know, it's just the benefit is obvious. I love this idea with the interactive, the updated map going on through that. I mean, we could fill the whole country with Pacifica Radio Archives' amazing stuff. This is wonderful. It happens that actually this... using your nonprofit as curriculum happens at my own job, although it's more about art and architecture and self-expression in a kind of a different way. But we have professors in high schools that send their students over to our location where I work to study and report back on it every year, and it's really good. My question is on... you mentioned I know that this is a five-station Pacifica fund drive, and thank you very much for being so sensitive to the stations, having a hard time raising money too. But I think this is just vitally important, and at least at my station, we're very happy to do it. So is it possible, if they wanted to, for affiliate stations to run this special?
No, the FCC doesn't allow the affiliate stations to fundraise for the another organization. But what we've done in the past was take some of the documentary content without the fundraising and distribute it to the affiliates for broadcast. Like the Pete Seeger year, we had mm-hmm. the Pete Seeger Tim Robbins documentary that we put out. I think Studs Terkel documentary we put out 1 year, and then the War and Peace documentary we put out, and basically that just had a pitch for the website, and hopefully somebody would have the initiative to go to our website during the day and see that we were fundraising. I would say maybe we got maybe like 1% of people from the affiliate market that sort of contacted us about a donation, so it's cool, and we'll still do that. We have a couple of pieces that will be appropriate for that.
Let me put something in everyone's ear, because this is something that's been coming up. I on our local NPR station, they've been doing a thing where when they're in the middle of their own fund drive, they'll say, like, if you forgo your thank you gift, we'll send 5% of your donation to, this year it was the Hurricane Ike Recovery Fund. Before that, they did it for Meals on Wheels. And I am on the NFCB list, and I asked the question there, you know, how can they do this? I thought it was illegal for you to raise money for another organization. And the rub is that you're not allowed to interrupt your regular programming to raise funds for another organization. But if you're already interrupting your programming, say in a fund drive at your local station, that you can ask people to give part of their donation to this other organization. So that might be something we could think about in the future for our affiliates and or even other nonprofits.
Well, I know the last NFCB, when we had the affiliates meeting, the affiliates were very, very open and willing to do what they could with fundraising. It's just a matter of, like, what were the parameters. So it would be nice to sort of bring that dialogue back up to see.
I'm going to talk to Ursula about it, yeah. See if she wants to pitch it to anybody, because this really, I've just had it verified again, and I have the rules, and it might be possible for you all to help each other.
Yeah. Right.
If that might be possible. I do know, though, that when, from the network station perspective, that when KPFA did a day of fundraising for New Orleans for the Tipitina Foundation,
right,
we had to go to the FCC and get a waiver.
But it's because we made a special little drive for them. We weren't in the middle of our own drives at the time. I know what you're talking about, and I asked that exact question. How come we had to do that, you know?
It was in the middle of our fund drive.
It was? Well, I would submit that probably we didn't need to do that then. But anyway, I'm going to look into this farther. I'll go ahead and take that initiative myself.
Okay, thanks, Wendy.
You're welcome.
Carolyn on the stack here, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going back to something you said, Brian, that sounds really exciting. You have 8 or 9 premium packages, and you said they pertain to real curriculum. How did you develop those packages, by yourselves or with anybody?
No, with Lamont Yeke, who I said was, you know, the professor at Cal State LA.
Yeke, right.
Right. He's the one that put together the civil rights and the U.S. history packages, because it's actually his real deal curriculum. But what we did with the arts and literature, the women's studies, the environment, 1968, Malcolm X, and Chomsky. So Chomsky and Malcolm X, those are pretty done deals. We put in bloody everything we have. And remember, Malcolm X isn't in curriculum. So part of the campus campaign and part of the pitch is that, you know, a lot of those red states that we saw yesterday, you know, a lot of what we can do to contribute to the new generation is to give them the materials that aren't in curriculum. This is the stuff that we weren't allowed to listen to. So Chomsky, Malcolm X, it's everything we have. The 1968 in review, we've been working on that project for 2 years. I've talked to every author of 1968 books and journalist authors. So basically that's been a collective project, a very collaborative effort with BBC producers who sort of identify the materials that are useful and relevant. Journalists who identify, you know, we know that RFK, MLK, Columbia student, and the DNC, those were the 4 big humongous hits in terms of media response and teacher response. So that I feel very comfortable in saying that it's, yes, we did it, but we did it with a lot of people and a lot of feedback data.
Mm-hmm.
The environment, we actually worked with Helen Caldicott about 6 years ago, helping identify materials for a 12-part series we did with her about who were the voices in the archives that were relevant to the environment. Both her and Michio Kaku helped develop these premiums over the past years. I mean, that's why they ended up in the From the Vault episode, because it was already, like, done material that had already been reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
The women's studies, I worked with the Feminist Majority, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
So the Feminist Majority, again, this was my insecurity. I don't want to put together the feminist pack because I'm not a woman. So the Women's Studies PAC, really, we really did collaborate with Addie Gevins, Lucia Chappelle, Feminist Magazine here at KPFK, the Feminist Majority as an independent sort of helper, Susan Rubin. So that was done that way. Arts and Literature, that one I just did myself because I'm good
at
that.
Yeah, I hear that you've been pretty thorough about this. What is the nexus? How are you going to connect to academic people
right.
and institutions?
Well, as you know, like it's sort of like a long road. Now, all right, so here's like the next part. This is going to answer this, but it's going to flow into the next part of this drive. I don't think that the campus campaign is a one-day fund drive. You know, I cannot bank $125,000 on a very precarious situation in the country economically. You know, this is really an unpredictable fund drive. But I think the campus campaign concept is strong enough that it will be a long-term project. So when you're talking about developing these packages for real curriculum and creating real curriculum, that really does take somebody who has a degree in developing the materials for curriculum for it to happen. But if you think about this as just the launch, just to say, like, we know that these packages are primary resource materials that are relevant to this subject matter. That's the letter that will come to it. It really is like we're putting it into the hands of the educators to sort of play with the materials and give us feedback. So the next sort of announcement part of the fund drive is that we're creating a new blog site. We have already secured intheschools.org. Intheschools.org.
Oh, cool.
And it will be, so each of these premium packages or the educational packages will have its own page where the educators, the teachers, and the students, participants that use materials, even from the Vault listeners, can also give feedback into how they felt about it, what did they learn, what they didn't learn, you know, is my narration crappy, whatever, you know, is the facts, I know, has the facts been checked, did somebody find something really cool about one of the recordings? So, well, hopefully the dialogue in this blog site will gather data that will then be able to be used to come to the professional to say, all right, so now we have this material. Here's a whole bunch of feedback from educators, students, the public, blah, blah, blah. Now it's time to sort of like really develop into professional, like National Teachers Association approved, that kind of thing, if that's where you're going with that.
Okay, that sounds fascinating.
Cool.
Andrea here. Did I miss something? Will individuals be able to just purchase?
Will individuals be able to purchase the premium buy? No.
Yeah, uh-huh. Opposed to be, okay. Good.
Right. And in other words, if you don't want a school or you don't know a school
uh-huh.
or if you didn't uh-huh. go to school, you know, we could take the premium and do the school for you. Like basically, if you don't have a school, you know, it's part of the package anyway. So what we'll
right,
do is
right.
we'll choose a school that nobody chose. Like if
okay.
I think
okay.
Mississippi, nobody's choosing Mississippi. Might be
mm-hmm.
nice to send it to
mm-hmm.
Birmingham High, you know.
Okay.
So basically what I think the big overall pitch is everything on November 18th is part of the campus campaign. Every
okay.
donation will be duplicated and sent to a school.
Okay, great.
And then you know what, we've kind of used this as a pitch in the past, you know, like buy this $5,000 library edition and wouldn't it be great if you donated it to a school after you listen to it, but we can't really track it. So I really kind of wanted to take on the onus to write the letter, to introduce it to the educator, to let them really kind of know from an archival point of view and a curator point of view what it is that they're getting. And also that really does sort of brand Pacifica
mm-hmm.
in a deeper
mm-hmm.
sense, that if educators are really noticing and working with the content of a station and a network like Pacifica, then maybe we actually can start, you know, a different kind of grassroots movement outside of radio listeners. You know, like this is a completely different mindset, which is also the different pitch, you know, in terms of this isn't call in and get this gift, buy this DVD or get this book for yourself
right.
so you can take it home.
Yeah.
you know, from
different
the vault
approach.
Really has been very, very popular. You know, Amy Goodman's been pitching the From the Vault collections. Each station premium orders have been full of From the Vault packages somewhere in the over the past 2 years. So this, again, you know, continues to brand Pacifica and continues to do something. What was it? Oh, I forgot already that part. All right. So, yeah, it takes us into areas where Pacifica stations aren't. All right, so which is my next little highlight? All right, so just going through the day really quickly, Noam Chomsky's with us with Sonali Kolhatkar car for his 80th birthday. There will be a new documentary on Les Paul. Les Paul is in his mid-90s in New York. Maggie LaPique, music programmer, director here at KPFK, flew to New York, did a great interview with him. Mark Torres and Maggie put together mixed-in music of Les Paul in the documentary, and it's pretty fantastic. So that will be in, like, one of the hours when most of the stations are in music world. All right, so now here's what my favorite part of the fun drive is. All right, so the whole idea about taking Pacifica Air content, history, whatever, into areas where we don't broadcast. Detroit, Michigan has never had a Pacifica signal, barely a community radio signal, and certainly nothing from prior to NPR, PBS being invented in the 70s. So we have a major donor named Allie Willis, who is the composer of The Color, one of the composers of The Color Purple, the musical. She wrote a lot of Earth, Wind, and Fire hits and is a Grammy Award-winning, multi-something, you know, award-winning person. And she helped put together our party, The Sound of Soul, back in February of 06. And she's an alumni of Mumford High School in Detroit, Michigan. It's the largest high school in Detroit, and it's 100% African-American. And this is sort of one of those serendipitous things that happened while we were meeting with Allie to develop our next February party to fundraise for the archives, you know, an off-air community event kind of thing. So as we were sort of developing and brainstorming, we really sort of hit on, while I was talking about campus campaign, she was talking about she just got the key to Detroit City from Martha and the Vandellas, Martha Reeves herself, you know, at Mumford High, and Mumford High went all out to give Allie a day. You know, like the band played a concert and the dancers danced and the singer sang and all of that. So we've already done this program. It's in the can, ready for broadcast. But we sent our BBC... does everybody remember that we are broadcast on the BBC Radio 5 Live, and that we have a BBC journalist that works with us for free producing our From the Vault for the BBC?
No,
well,
I didn't.
Well, we
Thanks.
Do.
We
started
right.
broadcasting 1 year a year ago. The BBC Radio 5 Live began broadcasting 20-minute segments of From the Vault, specifically produced for the UK, realizing that just a broadcast straight from our house of production is not the same as considering how the British and the UK listeners were educated. In other words, they don't have the same reference of United States history as we do. So introducing Malcolm X to a UK audience is very different than introducing Malcolm X to a US, a United States audience. I thought that was a brilliant thing to notice, and so that's what we do. So the cool thing is that Joanne Griffith, who is, she's black, but she's from London, now lives here in the States and works with us and has been producing this broadcast with us. And we sent her to Mumford High in Detroit this week, and we created a lesson plan. Now, here's the, sort of this another level of what the day is going to sound like. Like, how do we justify this campus campaign? We know that there are schools that don't hear it. We know there are communities that don't hear this material. But how does it really work? This is me. This is my inner dialogue as I'm creating the stuff. You know, how does it work in the hands of an educator? to actually make this part of the curriculum. Lamont Yaki, of course, is part of that process of, after 1.5 years of his students, and like, how do they actually work with the material? So with Mumford High School, this is like now going into high school 16-year-olds, not 22-year-old sophomore college level. So we went to Mumford High School, who, you know, this is total inner city high school. You know, you really do need a security guard to get you through the door. So Joanne went out there. We sent them 30-second cuts of civil rights, black power, international black events like Nelson Mandela getting out of jail. So just think about a dozen 30-second cuts of the greatest cuts we could think of. Rosa Parks, Fannie Lou Hamer, Malcolm X, you know the gig, James Baldwin, Lorraine Hansberry. Mm-hmm. We got them all. So we sent it to them with the lesson plan that they're to create a playlist, like an iPod playlist or a imagine being a DJ for a day. But what you have to do is match a song with a clip. How do you find a song that expresses Rosa Parks when she says, "My feet were tired"? What song would you choose when Muhammad Ali said, you know, "Damn the money, don't go to Vietnam"? So the educator, the teacher, and the principal have really worked with us to create this lesson plan for the kids. So we went and recorded it. Joanne recorded the actual lesson, interviewed the kids, talked about what their choices were. We have the music, we have the cuts that they used, and let me tell you, it's some of the most moving audio. It makes me want to work here another 10 years, almost.
Oh, wonderful.
So if you imagine a 16-year-old woman, who's 16-year-old girl who's never heard Rosa Parks' voice, heard her in a 30-second cut, and then tells us that she could not choose a piece of music because nothing could represent what she went through to give her her freedom. Hmm. That's what's going on the air that will say, this is why we need these recordings in the schools. Pick up the phone, donate $75, we'll send you a CD, we'll send the school a CD, and won't that be great?
That's great.
So
oh,
I'm
wonderful.
Very, very That's happy about great. Mumford High School.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, and so we will have, like, in one of that music area, we will actually play the playlist of these kids. So we will hear 30 seconds of Rosa, then we'll hear the hip-hop song that they chose for Malcolm. You know, we'll hear Muhammad Ali, we'll hear the James Brown song that they picked. So we'll actually have a lunchtime actual music time where we're not pitching like hell and nobody's demanding you to pick up the phone.
Right.
But it'll be proof in the pudding. Again, we go back to the teacher, and then this is, the proof in the pudding of what I'm trying to do, is that the teachers often have difficulty in connecting and personalizing history for children beyond the paragraph that's on the page in the textbook.
That's
students
so true.
Are often told that the civil rights movement is nothing more than a paragraph that says Emmett Till, Rosa Parks, Martin Luther King, and it's, everything is fine now. But what we got from the educator, the teacher, like the one that struggles to get the kids connected, is that this personalized this history for them. It made them actually think. That you can hear it in the recordings that these kids actually thought about what they were hearing and how do they express that connection. So I think that we've got like such an incredible concept that, again, launching it to our listeners, giving them the first opportunity to be part of this campaign, is only just the beginning. You know, we already interviewed Cornel West, who is 120% behind this campaign. He understands, as he wrote his book, Hope on a Tightrope, you know, he expresses youth and despair and the emptiness in our young society about how they think critically. So, of course, when we listen to James Baldwin and we have Cornel West saying it's absolutely vital that we don't lose that voice and we don't lose how that is expressed in his voice and his timbre and his resonance, it's, you know, Cornel West, he'll do anything he can to make this work. So there, that's Mumford High School.
Fantastic.
All right.
Absolutely fantastic.
It really is.
Brian,
thank you for taking this up.
Yeah, it's really amazing. The 1968 events,
mm-hmm.
Columbia University had a 40-year anniversary party last year.
Yeah.
And out of that has come, I think, two films, videos that are being
mm-hmm.
done by various people, and a website, and, of course, an e-list and a whole compilation of stuff, including some personal videos and memorabilia. Have you worked with anybody at Columbia about what
happened?
Barbara
Bernstein was one of the producers. She was one of the students, but she was also producing some of the promotional stuff before the anniversary. And Juan Gonzalez, we were sort of involved with Juan as the
mm-hmm.
40th anniversary event was happening. So the audio that we preserved and posted of the Columbia student strikes was made available on the website before the 40th anniversary, and their website used the audio for their
mm-hmm.
what we're calling the audio poster. Barbara Bernstein was sort of hired to do posters for the event,
mm-hmm.
but being a radio producer, she put together an audio poster, which was on their website.
Mm.
So we already have an audio interview with Barbara and Juan, too, I think, from the Vault episode, about that very thing of, like, what was it like? What does this audio mean to you? Why were you there?
Now, when you say on their website, do you mean Columbia's website or the organizer's website?
Or the organizers of the event website. Columbia University wouldn't.
Well, no, Columbia, that's the problem. Columbia did actually set that up and try to co-opt it to some extent. So I'm just wondering who you worked with.
No, I worked with the activist student
mm-hmm.
organizer club.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but there's a website I'll send you the link to that you might want to hook up.
Okay, cool.
Very good. That sounds delightful.
So the rest of Malcolm X will have Manning Marable, who was on Democracy Now! This morning, African American history. Now that we have President-elect Obama, a lot of this resonates differently. Now really think about it. Last night did change history. Much of the recordings that we have of the civil rights is almost overnight past history, like one step deeper into history. So a lot of this connection about Manning Marable and Cornel West and Margaret Prescott hosting the Civil Rights Hour, this is what we're talking about. Like, this material is historic because history has already changed. So Manning Marable will be with us, Cornel West. And then, again, we'll have a lot of interwoven, not only the testimonials from educators and filmmakers who've used the materials, but also a report to the listener, basically from me and the archive staff of, how does a tape, what has their donations in the past proven? So that was Mumford High School, Malcolm X, Jerry Cornel West, Ian Masters of Background Briefing here at KPFK has exceeded Amy Goodman in fundraising. I think he made something like $38,000 in an hour. Somehow he has hit the run. He's gotten an incredible audience and has done, I think, one or two past national broadcasts. Either it was debate or a convention or a rally or something. But Ian Masters has just recently cooed not one, not two, not three, but six guests for a two-hour block, including Dolores Huerta, Tariq Ali, Gloria Steinem. That was four. I missed two. But anyway, he's got some incredible guests lined up to come on live to talk about Gloria Steinem. We'll listen to a Bella Abzug clip. We'll talk about the women's movement and why these materials belong in education. I think that's kind of like the whole roundabout.
Cool. Oh.
Sounds fantastic.
Powerful. Yeah.
Really.
Oh.
That's quite amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you very much. We've got two weeks and less than 2 weeks countdown.
Yeah.
So in the coming days, like the GMs I'll be meeting with tomorrow, the
mm-hmm.
PDs have been notified and updated constantly as the idea has been developing and coming together. And now the work begins with promotion. We do not have the kind of media release we used to have in past years because we couldn't pull it together in time to commit hosts and guests and everything to get the print media. So it's not going to end up on the cover of the LA Times. But as we've seen just in the past 1 year, the web, the internet, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, all of that can really do a lot more than what we were able to do last year. So we'll have a press release available by tomorrow for everybody to forward to wherever you want to forward it to. Those of you who are Facebook friends with me, you'll see it on the Friends of the Pacifica Radio Archives group on Facebook. So we'll just start the countdown, basically. The audio promos, are a couple of them are already done and are in the hands of the program directors. So you should start hearing some very low-key, non-abrasive promos starting, and then as we get closer to the day, there'll be more about fundraising and the need and what we're actually trying to do. Web, there'll be like a little one-sheeter that I can send out as a postcard. I've done this before. There's like a little email postcard which has audio embedded, some graphics, but you can forward that to a friend or download it and post it on a website or whatever.
And what is the Facebook title again, Brian?
Friends of the Pacifica Radio Archives.
Thank you.
And I think it's one of those public groups where anybody can join. I don't think I have to approve you to join or not. If we could fill up that little group as much as possible and send some notices out, that's sometimes as good as a press release. The other cool thing is, you know, as we've been working with our BBC journalists, there's always been a connection with the BBC, and they're going to be doing some special programming. The BBC does not have the FCC on their back. So they can't do pitching like we do, but we have been able to sort of morph a little program for the BBC that might bring us some international crowd.
Well, thank you so much for the update, and I'm glad to have had the opportunity to meet and check in with the rest of this really great committee, task force. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to run, trying to make a little bit of history here in Oakland, but I'll check back in with you.
Okay, well, thank you very much,
Andrea. All right, yeah, goodbye, everybody.
Bye, Andrea.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, let's see, John Almella, you're still there, aren't you? John?
I think he might have just put us online.
Okay. All right, well, I think I'm done. Unless
I am
has
here.
Anything
Does anybody
else?
Have other questions? Did everybody go?
I'm still here.
Oh.
Here's my question.
Yes.
Is there any of this, what can we help you with? I mean, I know you want us to publicize to our own stations to get real excited about this fundraiser.
I would say, yeah, promotions. Like when I get you guys some text and some materials and graphics, you know, anything you can do to just send it out as much as possible. You know, check in even at the station. Just make sure Ernesto and not to look over the shoulder, just to be supportive of them. You know, like
are
what I don't know what they
need. All stations are carrying it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we're good with that. And everybody's been very accommodating. You know, again, you know, just because of the nature of what's happening at the stations with staffing and money, it's been, let me say this right. I won't say it's been easier, but it's been less problematic with of trying to mix and mingle everybody into the broadcast and go through switching technical signals from WBAI and WPFW and, actually each station we have done, like, you know, going a roundabout from each station. So in a way, we sort of have insulated ourselves where the broadcast is, most of the broadcast is going to be coming from KPFK, and the archives. Chris Welch up at KPFA is going to be hosting the, 1968 hour. So we're happy that got in there. But for the most part, it's just been really difficult to produce this the way that we have in the past because
yeah.
of resources for us. It really is Mark, Joanne, and Brian producing all 16 hours,
mm-hmm.
doing everything from setting guests, pre-recording interviews, doing the promotions, doing the concept, figuring out the web. You know, the whole kit and caboodle is just the archives, five people doing the background work. So this year we just weren't, we didn't have the luxury to invite the whole network to do the network broadcast, although I really, really love it. I think this year the concept of the campus campaign is so strong, I think we'll be fine. And I think ultimately we can still do what I hope would be a really good special national roundabout broadcast with no fundraising. Like, it would be great to have each station take an hour and, you know, honor, celebrate Pacifica through its archives and have a great time. But, you know, nobody has to give.
Just yeah, that to, would be fun.
Just have to receive. All right.
Brian, a slightly related question, Carolyn.
Yeah.
When archive material is used for premiums, is there a way that that happens that's sort of routine, or does it just depend on somebody contacting you because they happen to know something they'd like to use? Do you make any special efforts to provide information to encourage producers to use archive material as premiums?
We do it in a number of ways. It basically changes with the seasons. We do put out a premium list of materials, new and newly revised, to the GMs and the PDs. But it doesn't go beyond the GM and PDs from my seat. In other words, I don't have the email addresses for every individual programmer, so it goes through that filter. Oftentimes, individual programmers that use the archives materials frequently come to us directly, not only to sort of go over what is being offered, but also to sort of help develop premiums that pertains to their particular program. Each station is definitely different. Being here at KPFK certainly gives us the face-to-face relationship with programmers, and the GM hardly even knows it. Whereas the other stations, there's sort of a, I won't say hierarchy because that's not right the right word, but there's just a, not a face-to-face, but it still happens, where individual programmers will come and request materials for a specific program.
Okay, that's interesting. I just wondered how it happened that some things are used and some are not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 10 years I've been here, Carolyn, and I've never seen the premium orders from the stations come in consistently. This particular season, KPFK, WPFW had one of the highest premium Pacifica Archives premium orders like in the past 6 years, whereas another station didn't use the materials from the archives this fundraiser because the last fundraiser, they used a whole bunch of them. So it's sort of like a balance at the local level of what is saturated in the market already.
Yeah.
Because even if we repackage it or reintroduce it or revise it or newly improve it,
mm-hmm.
It still takes the program director and the program development person and blah, 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 people like Bonnie to figure out if the market will take it or not. So it's all, it's a marketing game as well as, it's not just here it is, take it or else.
Well, it is. New York BAI is just developing a new programming committee. The old one has been moribund for a long time. So maybe if you sent me some stuff, I could distribute it that way, informally.
Sure. Yeah. The document isn't private or anything. It's just a matter of it.
No, it's
doesn't
getting
get
it
distributed.
Done. Yeah.
So be fine to. I'll put it a note to send the Archives Task Force the premium offerings each season.
That would be great. Thank you.
Sure. For instance, one of my favorite, a really good premium with KPFK was an election primer. I would say right after the first debate, and then again, this sort of depends upon the fundraising schedule of when the stations are in drive when a particular developed premium works. So KPFK happened to be in fund drive at a point when we could get an election primer compilation together and shipped out to the listener in time to review before they go into the voting booth. So what we did is we worked with the KPFK programmers and asked them for their best interview or program on 10 specific issues in the election. California propositions, we wanted to go national, but because the local propositions were part of what their content was, we decided to do an LA thing only on this one. So we pulled together, I think, 10 or 15 hours of the best interviews and programming from national and local programmers on election issues. Put it together, they pitched it, people bought it, we drop shipped it, which basically means rather than us packaging it in a box and sending it to the station, which is downstairs, and then they open up the box and then they put addresses and all the little individual pieces, we got the names directly from them, and then we put the names on the individual pieces and shipped them out within a few days rather than a few weeks. So that was really an exciting collaboration of, you know, the idea, you know, it came to us. We went down there. Everybody got on board. They, you know, they actually did some work, gave us the information, gave us the content. We compiled it. And we did the work by, you know, returning the favor by making sure the listeners got the premium in their hands before the voting was done.
That sounds fantastic.
If there was a lot of gelling in the network in terms of fundraising seasons or, another level of communications with the program directors or whoever the real people are that are developing premiums, then we could have done a national election primer from Pacifica. But, you know, frankly, the staff just isn't there. You know, the staff is struggling day to day with fewer resources to get the job done. Bonnie, if you want to ring in with that and confirm that, that would be good.
I'm sorry?
So if you want to ring in and say, yes, that's true, staff is hard, they're struggling, and they don't have time to develop new premiums every day.
There are so many things right now.
Yeah.
We're making everybody kind of go in circles.
Yeah. I totally understand and appreciate that at the stations and what the programmers are having to go through on a daily basis to make the station live. That's why I really didn't want to just go on the air and pitch again to, you know, take Malcolm X and go home and listen to it by your fire over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't want to take away that. And I didn't want to give that to the listener either. You know, I really think that if we really think about our mission, if we really think about preservation and access, like the access is the big capital word this time. Previous fundraisers have been about preservation, where are we going to save the tapes? This is about, we've saved some tapes already, fantastic. Now it's mission-driven access. Who has access, who doesn't? Let's start at high school. So I think that really does sort of break the mold. It really will sound different. It won't sound like a fun drive so much. So hopefully that won't further fatigue the listeners into the, oh my God, it's another call the number thing.
Right.
And again, you know, if I don't make the goal on the day, I think I'm going to be okay, because if I've got Cornell West saying he'll do anything to help me, I am going to call him, and I made sure I got his cell phone.
You know, can I give you a suggestion?
Please.
Because we've just become accustomed to it, it would be good when you got promo information out to the stations if somehow the programmers could understand a little bit more about this taking it to the classroom aspect of it.
Right. In the GM call tomorrow, Bonnie, and actually I think I copied you the email because you're on that the group as Sherry's
translator.
Yes. I didn't know how to say. I realized we were on the web stream, and I wanted to be appropriate. Not that there's something inappropriate. I just wanted to be accurate. So you'll see that there's some tasks for those stations to do in terms of giving us what we need to get the job done. But also I did want to talk about that as well.